Okay, hey guys, how are you? Hello everybody. So nice seeing people. It's very cold out, and even though it's only 8 o'clock at night, at least to me it feels late. It's the fact that people are dragging those out to come here to Centauri. I appreciate it. Okay, so I wanted to share a topic that is close to my heart. And then also speak for a few minutes at the end just about some reflections of the last couple weeks of an experience that I was blessed to experience. But that topic is Nosi V'Olam Chaveiro. That's the idea of, how would you best translate that in English? To find a great translation. Nosi V'Olam Chaveiro. What's like the, I have a good translation of that statement. Anybody? Marty? Yeah, like carrying the burden of somebody else. And we know that the idea of carrying someone else's burden is something that plays a huge role, a very significant role in the Torah, in the Midrashic literature, in the Gemara, and the Mishnah, and the Acharon, and the Bali Musar. It's something that, it's a concept that is like very, very, very close to our hearts and to our consciousness. It's something that I think we can take a lot of pride in as far as sort of the sensitivity towards that idea of Nosi V'Olam Chaveiro. Okay, so I want to start with the place where this is discussed explicitly, the first place that it's discussed, and that is in the Mishnah at the end of Pirkei Avos, Perek Vav. Anybody have a comment about the sixth Perek of Pirkei Avos? What's different about the sixth Perek of Pirkei Avos? Anybody know? As opposed to the first five Prakim? Anybody? So the first five Prakim were written originally as Pirkei Avos, but then they wanted to have six Prakim. They wanted to have... How are you? They wanted to have six chapters that we can have between Pesach and Shavuos. So therefore they added on like another perek, but this was done much, much later, the sixth perek of Pirkei Avos, and there's a lot of historical research about the sixth perek. It's very different. It's written very differently. Conceptually, it's very differently. So in that sixth perek, and that perek is normally called the perek of Kinyan Torah, of acquiring Torah, so the Mishnah says, Gedola Torah Yoser Mina Kuhuna Mina Malchus. That Torah is greater than the priesthood and it's greater than the kingship. Shamalchus nicknames b'shlosha malos. That kingship, b'shlosha malos. That kingship was acquired with 30 different means of acquisition. That kahuna ve'esum yarba. Kahuna, the priesthood is acquired with 24. The Torah nicknames the arba mishmona dvarim. Now I don't know what happened. I had some adventures with the printer before in YU. I don't know, it has something against vases and gimels and ratios and other things. I'm sorry if this is like a little bit of an adventure to read certain words, but we'll sort of make up words as we go along. The Torah was nicknamed, Torah was acquired with 48 different acquisitions. Okay? B'talmud. What does B'talmud mean? What's probably the best definition of that? Like serious study. B'shmias ha'ozen, the capacity to be a listener. B'arichas fasayim, with the capacity of being able to argue clearly or speak clearly. The Venus Halev, with a certain depth of understanding. The Sichlus Halev, what's the difference between the Venus Halev and Sichlus Halev? These are two words that are used. And we have a good distinction between those two. Venus Halev versus Sichlus Halev. By the way, it's fascinating that knowledge stems from the heart, right? This is not Venus Hamoach. Knowledge of the brain. So what's Binas HaLev or Sichlus HaLev? Anybody have a thought about that? Okay. So Bina normally would be what? Probably like a depth of understanding. Seichel might be like analytical abilities. Okay. And on the Mishnah goes. Be'ema, a person when they learn, they need to have a sense of awe. Be'yira, maybe even a sense of fear. Be'anava, with modesty. And the Mishnah continues, Misrachik mina kavod. Below Magus Libo Batamudo, person should not be a Balgaiva. Okay? The person should not be, oh, I know everything, and let me tell you this, and I'll tell you this Marmakum, and I'll tell you this, and the Rabban said that over there, and when you sort of look at me, that's not the whole spirit of Torah. Beinu Sameach Bahura, person also should not be looking to paskin halakha too readily. And also Nosi V'Olam Chaveiro, person should also take upon themselves the yoke of their friend. Machriel chaschos, we should always give a person the benefit of the doubt. Mamido ala emes, we should always try to make sure that the Torah is truthful, comes out complete, etc., etc. Now, this is just a smattering of the 48 different ways that the Torah is koneh. Now, what's the obvious question on this? Right? Which of at least in this list that I gave you, and the list obviously is much longer, which of those words do not fit? Which of those midos would you say, huh, that's interesting. I never thought that for a Kenyan Torah, I would need to be X, or it would require Y. So at least in the list that I gave out, and maybe it's obvious by the title of this year, okay? So which of those things would say, wait a second, you really need to have a Kenyan Torah, right? So it would seem to be the answer is Nosebil M'chavera. If we say, if we're speaking about being Kona Torah, making Hamchacham, the Talmidah Chachama, being knowledgeable, making a Kenyan Torah, making a Siyam Hashas, making a Siyam on anything, learning anything. So what does that have to do with being Nosei Ba'ol M'chavera? What does that have to do with bearing the yoke of your friend? There seems to be no relationship between the world of Kenyan Torah and the world of Nosebil M'chavera, right? Everyone hear that question? You hear that point? Okay, fine. So what I want to do for the next few minutes is, before we get back to that question, I want to discuss different facets or different elements or the history a little bit of the discussion in the Gemara and the Rishonim of this topic of Nosebil M'chavera. So I want to share with you a shot that I love. I have to say that I have referenced back in my mind this idea on many, many occasions. By show of hands, does anybody here ever have to deal with a difficult person? You guys have like the best life, by the way. Okay, Shoshana, who, for instance, by the way, no, okay. We're not gonna, part two of the question is not telling me exactly who that person is, but I want you to sort of like imagine sort of like the most unctuous, you know, obnoxious, like sort of people in your life. We all have people like that in our life. Unfortunately, sometimes we're related to those people, but okay, that's for like a different discussion. But so that's what the Medrash Shmuel says, because the normal way that we think about the idea of Nosei Ba'ol M'chavero is exactly what Marty said, right? Bearing, I don't mean like your twin sister is a difficult person, but maybe, but right. So Nosei Ba'ol M'chavero, normally think is like bearing the yoke of another person, to bear their burden, to be concerned about them, to have a certain empathy for them. That's normally the way we would view Nosebil M'chavera. But the Medrash Shmuel is something which I love, and I'll tell you a personal story related to this. So he says, Inami Nosebil M'chavera, another pshat, Sovil Midosav Shel M'chavera, that means we can tolerate the midos, we can tolerate the behavior of our friend, Af Shehem Ko'ol Chaveda Lav, even when they're acting like a total ol. Even when they're acting like a total burden, even when they're being obnoxious, even when they're being insensitive, even when they're being unruly, right? Even when they're acting like an ol, we can be nosei. We can tolerate that. Okay? Husovel osam, I can tolerate that person. V'imyesh l'chavero eza mida meguna umachis oso. And if let's say this person has a mida meguna, has like sort of like a disgusting quality, don oso l'chavsvos. So we can say, you know what? That person's having a bad day. Maybe that person has certain pain in their life. Maybe that person has something going on in their life. So let's say someone comes to me and they're acting obnoxious. I can say, I can tolerate that person. And maybe they're going through certain things in their life. The Omer, lo hay belibo rak tov. This person only really means good in his heart. Okay? So we should like be done chavspos in that person. Okay? This sort of, you know, resonate with people. The capacity of saying, you know what, they don't mean to sort of be acting the way that they're acting, but let me sort of figure out what's like really in their heart. So I just want to mention just, I always think back to something that happened a few years ago when I was the rabbi of our shul in Muncie. And we used to do in our shul, we would have like every year a Kesser Torah award in our shul. And I would give out svarim to people in the shul who I thought put a lot of effort into the shul, and I would speak about. So every year we'd have like three or four different people, and I would speak about that person. In fact, this year I gave a sefer to the non-Jewish custodian who did so much for our shul, etc. Anyway, we had learned this Medrash Shmuel in shul on Thursday night when we were doing Pirkei Avos to not look at a person's behavior, which I focus was really on their heart, to tolerate a person when they're an ol. And at the kiddush after shul, this guy comes over to me. I believe that he had already had a lot, much too much to drink as it is. And he corners me in the shul and he said, Rabbi, he said, you're disgusting. He said, how do you live with yourself? How do you look at yourself in the mirror? And he's going on and on and on about what a disgusting person I am, how I didn't honor him. He does so much for the shul and I never honored him. And 15, 20 minutes, he is just giving me a mishaberach to end all mishaberachs. telling me I kind of look at myself in the mirror. So people are sort of trying to peel them off me because they realize that I was sort of getting attacked. And I said, no, it's totally fine. I can tolerate this person's pain. This person who's not happy with their life, probably had a lot of hardships in their life. It's not really what that person means. I can tolerate that person. And I was thinking to myself, like, Baruch Hashem, we had just learned this Medr Shmuel 2 days ago, and I had this idea in my mind of, you know what, I can tolerate this person who is acting like an old. Okay? So I'll go through some other sources, just sort of the history of this Midah that we see through the Torah and through Chazal. So it says, Vayishma Elokim is Nakasam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard their pleadings, Vayishkar Elokim is Briso, Vayis Avram, Vayis Yisrael, Vayakov. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered the bris with Avram, Yisrael, and Yaakov. Vayar Elokim is Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. That's an amazing language. God saw Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. And God knew Bnei Yisrael. And listen to this beautiful Rashi. Vayeda Elokim, Nosan Aleihem Lev, Velo Helim Enof. Okay, what does that mean? Nosan Aleihem Lev, Velo Helim Enof. God looked at them, and he did not remove, quote-unquote, his gaze. God looked at Bnei Yisrael without any removal, without any distractions, without any sort of hesach hadas almost, just focused and looked at Klal Yisrael. Okay? Anybody know, by the way, who discusses this topic in the Baalei Musar or the Baalei Makshava? Anybody know who has a beautiful discussion about this idea based on this Rashi? Anybody? So there's a beautiful piece by Revolvi where he discusses this midah of Ha'aras Panim, shining one's face onto another person, being totally present with another person, seeing another person. That's exactly what Rashi is describing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. Nasan Aleihem Lev, V'lo Helem Einav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am not looking away from my people. Now, where else do we see that same idea in Chazal? Where else do we see the same idea in the Medrash, or that same concept of being completely present in the lives of somebody else? So one of the most famous and beautiful Rashis in all the Torah appears actually right before this. Vayhi bayimim ahem, vayivda Moshe, or vayigda Moshe, I apologize. Vayetzei elochav. Moshe Rabbeinu, he got older, he grew. He went out to his people, vayar v'sivul asam. He saw their struggles, he saw their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri. And he saw there was an Egyptian man who smote a Jewish man, Me'achav. Okay? So Vayar B'Sivul Asam, Rashi says so beautifully, and if a person wanted to sort of pick a Rashi to live by in their life, it might be this Rashi. Nosan Einav V'libo Lios Meitzar Lehem. He placed his eyes and his heart, Lios Meitzar Lehem. What does that mean, Lios Meitzar Lehem? To be concerned, to be connected, to be involved in their life. What's striking about this Rashi? Nosan Einav V'libo Lios Meitzar Lehem. Vayetzei Elochav, who went out to his people. Vayar B'Sivul Asam. Nosan Einav V'libo Lios Meitzar Lehem. What seems to be striking about this Rashi, in a way that probably is relevant to anybody learning it, and anybody who lives in this world? What's Rashi's pitch? What is Rashi really saying sort of happened or transpired in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? Anyone? Was this the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu had saw the people? No. Was this the first time that he wandered out? Let's say we were just in Vienna, and sort of thinking about that place that we saw where Hitler spoke from, on top of this machshavah, from this balcony. You can almost imagine Moshe Rabbeinu coming out many times onto the balcony and seeing people around him, but just sort of not taking it in, right? Not acclimating that, not feeling it. Okay, those are Jews, they're working. And all of a sudden, sort of one day, by Yigdal, a certain almost communal maturity, a certain almost spiritual growth took place. And all of a sudden, Nosan Eina Beliba Lios Meitzar Lehem. He actively placed his heart and his eyes to sort of worry about them. And that's something which doesn't happen necessarily, what Rashi is pointing out, and what the Vervolvi points out. It doesn't just happen. It's it's an act of Nisina. Right? You can sort of walk by somebody on the street, a poor person, 1,000 times, and not really see them. Right? Not sort of say, well, this is a person who had a mother, who has a mother, who was once a child, who was once beloved, who was once... And then one day you see that. It's you place Nosan Eina V'libo, and that is a conscientious, mindful, intentional act that Rashi is describing. Okay? Continuing in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, and of course Moshe is the paradigm of this need of Notzvim Chaveiro, is a Medrash I imagine many of you are not familiar with. Many of you probably do know the Medrash about Moshe and David as the shepherd and the sheep that went down to the water, the beautiful, beautiful Medrash. And this Medrash is sort of keeping with that. Vayar b'sivul esam, right? He saw their burdens. So mahu vayar, what does it mean that he saw, right? Meaning, obviously, he saw. Why is the Torah telling us that he saw? That seems to be an extra word. Okay, so the Medrash says, Shahiro b'sivul esam, he saw the burdens of the people around him. Ubocha v'omer, right? And he cried and he said, hey, I think, if I'm not mistaken, chavali aleichem. That sound right? Okay, everyone. If not, I think that sounds right. Chavali aleichem, like, I am pained because of them. Miyite mosi aleichem. Like, I wish I could almost, like, die in their place. I wish, like, the pain of seeing his people were so intense. Miyite mosi aleichem. Like, if I could only sort of almost perish instead of having to bear witness to that type of suffering. The most difficult backbreaking labor is that with making cement. Imagine how unusual this was. He actually, according to this Medrash, nosing seifav. He actually went and he started carrying burdens. He started lifting the raw materials onto his shoulders. And he was like sort of so moved. Now, what again is unusual about this Medrash? Right, Bocha Lehem, does that sound normal? Yes. Chavali Alechem, Mite Mosi Alechem. And then by Yanosing Seifav Misayel Pol Echa V'yafa Mehem. What do you make of that statement in the Medrash? And again, and I believe that in forming religious character, this line in the Medrash is so significant. Now, what's significant about this Medrash? Contextually or historically? Anybody? It's quite unusual. Moshe Rabbeinu is a prince, right? The prince of Egypt. We know he is a princely person, and the fact that somebody from that sort of perch, to some degree, says, "I cannot sit here just sort of like watching that go on. I'm actually going to sort of go down among the people and actually walk around with like bricks and mortar on my shoulders," right? What does that tell you? That tells you it's like the inability almost of being inactive, right? The inability of sort of pulling back. And that's sort of like the picture of Moshe Rabbeinu in that moment, like that inability of just saying, well, okay, you know, it is what it is, but I need to sort of like run into the fray a little bit. And I believe that's like a beautiful description of that. Now, we have many other places as well where we see some Moshe Rabbeinu, but something that Chazal points out, which is striking, is the pasuk in Bamidbar. So, Yafkei Hashem, or so Yifkod Hashem Elkei Ruchos, L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Moshe Rabbeinu, towards the end of his life, he says, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, can you please make sure that there's another leader to take my place? Right? I'm going to be gone from this world soon. And Moshe Rabbeinu's concern is the next leader. So Chazal points out, Rashi quotes in the Medrash, Lohodia Shifchan Shel Tzadikim. This is a way of letting us know the Shifchan Shel Tzadikim, the praise of righteous people. Kishin Iftar Min Ha'olam Menichim Tzarkan. When a person is leaving this world, they're about to perish, menichim tzarkan, they put aside their own tzarchim, their own needs, v'yosim tzarki tzibur. So you can almost imagine Moshe Rabbeinu is almost on his deathbed. He's thinking about the next chapters of his life. He's not thinking about, woe is me, of I'm not going into Israel. He's not thinking about the unfairness of it all, and all I did was just hit that rock, or whatever the case may be. But what he's thinking about is the future, and he's thinking about the Am, he's thinking about the next leadership. And that is very, very, very significant, and it's almost unnatural, right? That's not sort of the natural nature of man, that you're on your deathbed, and you're worried about the Am. And that's something which, again, Chazal is pointing out in Moshe Rabbeinu. I've always loved the introduction of Nefesh HaChayim, which is written by his son. Anybody know who wrote the Nefesh HaChayim? Sort of a trick question, what's that? Chaim Volozhin, and his son was Rav Yitzchak Volozhin. Rav Yitzchak Volozhin is one who actually sort of wrote the manuscript itself. If you guys, as I recommend everyone should learn Nefesh HaChayim at some point in their life, sooner rather than later. Everyone should have a beat-up copy of Nefesh HaChayim. I take mine, I throw it against the wall just for good measure. But so the footnotes and everything was written by son of Yusuf Volozhin. Anybody know who the son-in-law of Yusuf Volozhin was, who his daughter married? It's not an easy question, anybody? So his daughter married the Nitziv, the Talit Tzvi Yehud Berlin, and that really became sort of the Volozhin yeshiva for the next 50, 60 years. So I want to read to you, because there's so many of these like boxes in the middle, I'm just going to read to you a few lines from the copy itself. So Haimimait Kovod Atzmo, you can sort of follow along as well. He's speaking about his father, that his father, Reb Chaim Volozhin, would be Mimait Kovod Atzmo. He would diminish his own need for respect. Laharbos Kovod Shemayim. He wasn't into sitting up on a stage. He wasn't up about making money. He made no money. Everything he did was Kovod Shemayim. Hei Bemila Ditzibura. Especially when it came to being involved in the Tzibur, the Prat Binyani HaKlal, especially when it had to do with the larger nation, Mudasha Hishlut Nafsha Mineged, Be'ezek Harbe Yeser Apide Koko. He gave of himself even more than his physical strength, right? He gave so much more than what was even natural. Be'atki Zakin Haya, even when Reb Chaim Volozhin was an older person, Hayyod Evamuna, he never gave up. He never said, well, I'm done. He kept on raising more money for Volozhin. He kept on working more for the community. Ad Bo Hashemesh, until the sun literally set on his life. Be'atki Chlos Koach, even when his strength had already left him, even when he was on his deathbed, Rayonav Sliko, his thoughts were still sort of thinking about the Jewish people. His eyes were looking heavenward. Even on those last moments of his life, he was thinking about the klal, about the Jewish people, and being mitzariv shem shemayim, connecting God's name to that. Begenuche v'adchot v'shivra masnayim. He was sort of yelling out and calling out about his concern for the Jewish people in a way that even hurt the ears. V'anchos av harbos v'zeh hayushovros po guf hashmeya. Anybody that would hear my father in his deathbed crying for the Jewish people, it would almost break Guf HaShemeya. Any person who would hear that, okay? The Hayarugalo Chiyachosi, this is the line that I always loved. Rabbi Yisrael Volozhin was saying about his father that his father always gave him tochacha. He always gave him like Musar, Al Shara Sheinani Mishtatif Bitzar Dacharina. That he felt that I was not sufficiently connected to the tsar of other people, right? And that was the one Musar that my father always gave me. V'kohaya Dibroi Laitamid, he said, even on my father's deathbed, he would tell me, Shezek Ola Adam, this is the totality of man. Lo La'atmo Nivra, a person was not born for himself. Rak Lahoel Lachrine Kokola Shagimatsu V'kohalasos. And that's on his deathbed, these were the messages that Reb Chaim Volozhin was giving to his son Yitzchak. With like strength, and almost like with Musar, to be there for other people. People are born into this world for other people. And this very much is in keeping with the Medrash of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu on his deathbed, he's worried about sort of the future of the Jewish people. And obviously without saying it, that's exactly what Rav Yitzchak Volozhin is referring to about his father as well. Look at this beautiful Gemara in Tanis. Because maybe you could say, okay, that's Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. Just leave me alone. Let me enjoy my my latte. Let me just sort of worry about what I have to worry about. Let me worry about my work. Let me just sort of enjoy my life. And we should definitely enjoy our life. And no one here would claim to live a life of asceticism where we have to take every piece of food and give it to this person. And we don't want to be those like annoying parents. You know, the annoying parents that like, you know, you have to finish your food because there's starving people in Africa. Like, we have to also be able to like live our life normally without constantly living in a state of tsar for other people. Okay? But you might say, okay, so far, Reb Lasso, you told me about was Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you want to even go further than Moshe Rabbeinu, you could speak about the fact that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that all leaders need to feel like the tsar of the people around them. Right? You sort of think a little bit about some of the stories that have emerged over time, Kanievsky in his own way, and all Gedolim, thinking about a very, very beautiful story about one of the great Talmidim of Rav Kook, the name of Yaakov Moshe Charlap. Is that familiar name to anybody? Charlap? So Rabbi Charlap used to be the Dean of Reitz. Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap was one of the great giants in Yushalayim of the 1940s and 1950s. And Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, during the 1948 war, So he refused to sleep in a bed. He said, people, you have to sleep in a bed, you need your strength. He said, there are people out there fighting, there are people who are digging ditches, there are people fighting a war. I'm going to sleep on the floor during that period of time. And he would go into the Beis Medrash in Shaarei Chesed, and he cleared out the entire Beis Medrash, telling people, you can't be sitting here learning, you have to go do something to join the efforts during the war. So you could say, okay, that's great. It's Moshe Rabbeinu, it's Rav Chaim Volozhin, it's Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, but that's not necessarily sort of my reality. So the Gemara says in Tannis is Tanya Idach, Bizman Shad Tzibor Shari B'Tzar, at a time where the Tzibor is Shari B'Tzar, okay, by the way, what's Masechus Tannis about? What's normally the Tzar being referred to in the Talmud? Yeah, so it's not raining, and you have places in Israel where there wasn't rain, or people that their crops are not being watered, and you could say, okay, fine, I'm living in the Galil, and I'm fine, right? But he says, "Bizman shad tzibor shari b'tzar, al yomar adam." A person should not say, "Eilach lebeisi, I'll go to my house, v'ocha v'eshta, I'll have my steak, v'shom alayach nafshi, and I'll be okay, and maybe I'll daven for that person, and shom my Yisrael." V'imosakeid, if a person does not bear the burden of somebody else, alav akasav omer, the pasuk says about him, v'neisasim v'simcha, harag bakar. So you slaughter an ox, v'shachat son, achal basar v'shosas yayin, you eat and you drink, ki machar namus. But tomorrow, if you're going to be so insensitive, then at some point, it's sort of like you're almost like dead, whether literally or figuratively. So el yitzar adam imat tzibor, a person has to feel the full weight of the tzibor. Shekei matzina b'moshe Rabbeinu, so we saw by Moshe Rabbeinu, shetzir atzvo imat tzibor. The Moshe Rabbeinu, very much, felt the tzar of a tzibor. Shenemar v'dei Moshe kvedim. We know by the battle with the Amalek, the Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up in the air. His hands started getting heavy. Vayichu evin vayisinu taktav vayeshev aleha. So he sat down on a stone. Now you think Moshe Rabbeinu was not a young person. He's sitting on a stone. The Gemara asked the obvious question, v'chi lo hayilo Moshe kar echad? Why sit on a stone? Let him sit on a recliner of sorts. Let him sit on a giant beanbag, okeses achas leishev alehav. So elakacham or Moshe. This is Moshe Rabbeinu said. Ho be Yisrael shruim b'tzar. If this nation is involved in a conflict, afani yeye mahim b'tzar. I need to also sort of shoulder that as well. V'chol b'tzar atzmim hetzibor zochav v'roa b'necham hetzibor. And if you truly feel the tzar of hetzibor, so then you will be zochav v'roa. You'll be merit to see that as well. Now, what's the chiddush of this Gemara? The chiddush of this Gemara is that even though it's not Moshe Rabbeinu, this Gemara is being addressed, excuse me, to everybody, right? Whether it's Moshe Rabbeinu, whether it's to leaders, or just to the average person. This is a Gemara about every single person when something is going on in the world, and especially within our own Jewish people, of how we experience that. If you look at in source number 9, and Ayel, this is actually something that you raised a question about 10 days ago, so you would appreciate this. So the tzir atzmo in the tzibor, so miloshen atzugia, everyone see the Maharsha? So miloshen atzugia mashma, she yitzara adoni macherim, gamshu eina b'tzara zu. Right? Even if you're not involved in that tzara, and even if you really can't do anything about it, right? There's nothing you can do, you're not involved in the tzar, there's nothing effective you can do, there's no impact that you can make, but you still have to feel something different. You can't go back to your house and achol v'shose, and have your suda, and just pretend everything is okay, even though it's not affecting you, and even though there's not so much you can do, there still is obviously the necessity of just sort of joining in that space, and being present in that space, and that's exactly what the Gemara is pointing out. I want to just point out this beautiful Teferis Yisrael, which we're going to have a little challenge reading. So Teferis Yisrael says, so hein, b'tirchus ha'guf, we speak about the idea of no tzvil mechavero. This is when you have tirchas aguf, even if it means having to go somewhere or drive something or do something or bring something or bake for somebody or, right, v'hein hotzos mamon, whether or not I have to lay out money for somebody. I'm going to go, okay, v'hein b'tzar nafsho, right? Or if it's tzar that I'm bringing to myself, meaning when we say that you have to be empathetic and connected, then that could be tirchas aguf. It could be going out of your way, it could be spending money, it could be some other form of tsar nafsho, something that's not comfortable for me. Al mashikar lo chavero, You have to sort of feel that about what may be going on with your friend. V'hein kishachaser seichel chaveiro, when you may be giving of yourself or of your wisdom to your friend, in yom zmanim onitzchim, whether it's temporary or whether it is for longer, lo yachlosh milatriach es atzmo liatzo. Do not say, well, I don't be matriach myself. I have other things going on. Lalamdo, either to give him eitzah, to teach him, or to bring him into sort of the chains of connection in this world or in the world to come. A person should never be saying, well, I'm doing this, but I can't really do it. I can't afford to do it. I can't that. I'm laying up money. I have to this. I have to... That's not the mentality. You have to do something, do it, and do so with a certain sense of leiv shalom. I just want to remember, actually just thinking about a very, very beautiful Talmud from the yeshiva who's getting married Emirus Hashem next week, the Ufra is going to be the Shabbos in Detroit. And this is probably a type of example that, you know, relates to many of you. So guys in the Spanish are like, well, should we go to Detroit for the Ufra for not? You know, you'd understand if we don't go, it costs a lot of money, and we have this, we're going to have Mashiach, we're going to have this. And the answer, of course, in that case is, you spend the money and you go. Right? Person's getting married, Mishnah, they have one Ufra from their life, they would appreciate it. There's an incredible sense of connection about an Ufra for a Shabbos Kallah. Okay, so you spend the money. At the end of the day, are you going to be worried in 10 years from now that you spent X hundreds of dollars to go to Detroit for a friend's Ufra? Like, of course not. Like, that's exactly what the Tiferes Yisrael writing hundreds of years ago was speaking about Nosgo Mechavero. You don't sit there, you don't say, oh, well, you know, the Tircha or the money or the expense. And sometimes a person can't do it. But generally, this Tiferes Yisrael should be like front and center in a person's brain in thinking about navigating human relationships. I want to mention briefly two stories that I just left like a very, very big impact on me, and I could mention many more stories. But I have a great blessing, of course, spending my life in a Beis Medrash, 150 blocks north of here, thereabouts, and being around people on a daily basis who form and shape a certain religious identity and a certain set of religious values. And I want to emphasize to you as well that as you go through your life, of just like the recognition of what it means to be around a Torah community, a Beis Medrash community, whether that's men or women, people that are constantly in their actions and their deeds, sort of like elevating just your core as a person. I know how much I benefited from that. So today's two stories, like thousands that I could mention. So as many years ago, and it was a very, very dear Talmud of the yeshiva had gotten engaged. And the Talmud was someone I was very close with and also very close with Rabbi Rosen's wife. And this person, without going into details, so the father had taken his own life. And the mother had very, very, very serious psychological issues. And the boy was not connected to the mother anymore because the mother was borderline personality disorder. And it was just very, very difficult. And this boy got engaged to a girl somewhere about an hour and a half away from Muncie, about 2 hours away from Queens. And the engagement party was on a Motzei Shabbos. And I normally do not like going to too many engagement parties, especially when it's like the summer and it's like the middle of nowhere and driving. But it was very important for me to go because Rosenzweig was an avelus for his mother. And I knew that he wasn't going to go. So I said, I want to have somebody from the yeshiva there. So I get in my car. I start driving to the middle of Yehupitzville on a Motzei Shabbos. After half an hour, I said, I'm so sorry, Baruch, whatever the guy's name is. I have to turn back. I was falling asleep. So the next day I came to the yeshiva. I said, Baruch, I'm so sorry. I really wanted to be there. I couldn't be there. I know that Rosenzweig wasn't going to be able to make it. He said, no, Rosenzweig came. He drove 2 hours each way from Queens. He couldn't stay because he was an avelus. He just gave a bracha to this person, gave him like an embrace, and then went back. 4 hours for 2 minutes. Right? Now you want to speak about what it means to be a Torah personality and what it means, what the Gemara says, to embody sort of like the life of Moshe Rabbeinu and what it means is like to live in action for other people. So like I can't think of like a better example of that. And I've been blessed to be Rosenzweig's my Rebbe, and I've seen that dozens of times in my own life. Now that's an action, right? That is getting in a car, heading off to Yehupitzville, New Jersey, for 2 hours to be somewhere. But let's say as long as there's no action. So I went to go speak to Rabbi Neuberger about something a couple weeks ago. Where your brother's now Talmud in his year. It's so nice to see him every day. And people know Rabbi Neuberger. He's just an incredible, incredible human being. I know the people here who are from Bergenfield and know the Neubergers. And we had a similar type of issue. There was a Talmud in the yeshiva whose father had taken his life. and an issue came up of how to navigate something about whatever the issue was. So I went to go speak to Rabbi Neuberger, and he just sat at his desk and he started crying. And there was nothing he could do other than maybe, you know, talk to me about what the issue was or try to be miyayis this person, but he could do nothing. But he could feel deeply for someone who was, you know, 22 years old, going through this with a parent who had taken their life the last 10 years or so, and just sat at his desk and just started crying. Like, you speak about the Torah ethic of what it means to be a person, what it means to be nosu kavero, even when it doesn't affect you, even when you can't do anything. That's what Maharsha pointed out. And like, example after example, people just in our lives who embody that type of life. So why don't we take a few minutes and get back to the original question. Anybody have any thoughts about the Marmakomos? We saw other Marmakomos, okay? So we spoke about, obviously, that Medrash Shmuel, even when your friend's acting like an owl, we saw sort of the history of Moshe Rabbeinu imitating the behavior of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who, that he did not remove his eyes from Chai Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu embodied those same egos as well. And on, sort of through the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, through that Gemara in Tanis, the Maharsha, the Teferis Yisrael. Okay, but what does it have to do then with Kinyan Torah, right? What does it have to do with Nos B'Mo Chavero to be Kona Torah? Why are those two things necessarily linked? And all the Meforshim sort of struggle with why do you need to be a bearer of another's yoke to be Kona Torah? It seems like those two things do not match. So the some Meforshim that they give answers that are related to the process of Lima Torah itself. Right? Everyone here, I'm sure, has a charusa, or they've had charusas before. Okay, you ever have a charusa that they're a much better talker than they are listener? Yes? Okay? By show of hands? Okay, I don't want to sort of cause any you know, contentiousness over here. But, you know, we all deal with people where their great strength is, like, making their point. But when you try to make their point, you know, there's not a lot of interest. There's not a lot of patience. There's not a lot of interest. Very quickly, you're told that you're wrong. Those are people that you really don't want to learn with in general, don't want to be married to, don't want to be good friends with. People that are not able to sort of like hear what you have to say, think about it, reflect on it, and then respond to it. So if you look in the Ruach Chaim, everybody know what the Ruach Chaim, the commentary on Pirkei Avos? This is also written by Rav Chaim Volozhin. These were the two svarim that he wrote in his life, Nefesh Chaim and Ruach Chaim. He says, Nosei Ba'ol im Chavero, Laharos panim l'svaraso. What does it mean, laharos panim l'svaraso? It's like you can, what's the sort of the best way of saying that? Laharos panim l'svaraso. Anybody? What does he mean? To like really take into account your friend's like svara and learning, right? Your friend has like a certain shot, a certain idea. Instead of telling him, ah, no, you're wrong, to really sort of say, okay, let me think about that. That might be a good idea. Okay? You don't want to help me out over here? Okay. You've actually looked, I brought it with me. What's that? Oh, thank you, Ayala. B'choshesh shema hadin chavera. So you should be choshesh that maybe you're talking about, let's say, two dayanim, so maybe the din, maybe the law is like your friend, okay? Ba'av sheyeh bar lo ki adinimo. Even though you know pretty sure that you're right, you still want to hear your friend out, right? Okay, the low. You know that you're right and your friend is wrong. Right? You don't go ahead and say, ah, what are you talking about? You don't act in any way pompous. You don't act like a bal gaiva. You say, you know what? I hear what you're saying. I understand why you're saying that. But I really actually think that this is probably pshat and this is the halacha. So what's the purpose then of nosi b'on chavero when it comes to being Kona Torah? That there's no way that, let's say, you're a dayan, or you're giving a shiur, or you care about Torah, you don't just come in like some bal gaiva. You say, you know, let me hear all the different opinions, let me be sensitive to those opinions, let me really hear the other person, and then I can respond. I'll tell you a very quick, funny story. Sometimes the challenge, some of you I know want to go into chinuch, I think it'll be great mechatim, and usually you try to sort of, when somebody says something in class, like, oh, that's interesting. No, well, you know, let me think that through a little bit. Let me, oh yeah, I never sort of saw that perspective. And every once in a while, somebody catches you off guard a little bit, okay? So I remember my first year I was ever taught was in Bas Torah in Muncie, Bas Torah, some 20-something years ago. And we were talking about something, and I mentioned the Rambam. So I said, oh, anybody know where the Rambam lived? And I didn't know how much I had ninth grade girls supposed to know, so I figured people knew that the Rambam lived in, was it where the Rambam lived? That's what I want to make sure. You know, there's many different answers you can give, obviously, Spain, Egypt, Israel, etc. So I said, where did the Rambam live? And girl, I'm like, girl, like, nobody? And then finally the girl's like, Brooklyn? I'm like, that is so close. That's really, you know, so many Sephardi Jews live in Brooklyn, but the Rambam sort of lived a little bit before Brooklyn actually was like a thing. And then, so you're seeing that you're trying. You're trying just to sort of, and that's what like the Rosh Chaim Volozhin is sort of talking about, that even if the other person's wrong, like, no sibol chaveru. You want to come to like a good halakhic answer. It means sort of being able to listen to another person without arrogance. What does the Medrash Shmuel say, like a different shot? So he says that sometimes you have a person, you think about, again, like a great Gadol of Yisrael, a great Tam Chacham, a great Dayan, it'd be very, very easy for him to say, you know, I know it, I don't need any help, right? But a person should have colleagues. And this thing that I always saw, being around people like Rabbi Willig, you know, and Rabbi Neuberger, and many others as well, it's like, okay, can we talk about this din? Can we talk about this halacha? This is a complicated case. And then they'll call over. But I've seen so many times myself, you know, Rav Schechter, this person, that person, say, okay, can we sort of talk through an issue together? And that's no se be'om chavero. You should bear the yoke of halacha and Torah together and be able to sort of have companions and have peers and have friends where together you can bear the yoke of Torah. So what these pshatim do is that these pshatim, they attach no se be'om chavero with the actual idea of learning. And psak halacha, and two people learning together, that you need to be someone that can bear the yoke of somebody else to learn. But the Maharal says, and of course the Maharal will say something somewhat deeper than that. So the Maharal said, and with this I'll conclude in a few moments. Let me just see the time. So the Maharal said, if you look in like the bottom line, he says, the ode, and the Maharal wrote a beautiful perish on Pirkei Avos called Derech Chaim. He says, the ode mora dover zeh, she'eino nivdal min haklal, kasher nosei bi'ol im chavero, v'roi el ha-Torah, shehi el ha-klal, kemo shehizvayar. But this is a beautiful and fundamental line in the Maharal. What happens when I am a person who's nosei bi'ol m'chavero? Right? What happens when I'm somebody who tries in our own life to be sensitive to other people, to bear the yoke of another person, to be there for other people? What am I demonstrating in that behavior? Like, what am I showing, says the Maharal? The Yod Mora Dover Zesh Eino Nivdal Min HaKlal, that I am part of Klal Yisrael, I am part of the Tzibor. If there's somebody who's living in the south of Israel, I'm living in the north of Israel, but I'm pained because of it. I am making a fundamental statement to the Maharal that I am an Ish Klal, that I am a person of the community, I am a person of the world, I am a person of the multitudes. Kasher nosi b'olam chavero, and that's what happens when I bear the yoke of another person. V'roi el ha-Torah, and if I can bear the yoke of a person, if I can demonstrate that I'm an ish klal, if I can demonstrate that I'm part of Am Yisrael, so then I am roi for the Torah. Then I can have a kinyan Torah, because the Torah was geared towards the klal. The Torah had to be given to the klal. If I'm just in my own bubble, if I'm in my own corner, if I'm in my own little section of the world, I'm not an ish klal, and I am not ra'oi, I am not deserving, I'm not appropriate to be connected to the Torah. And therefore, nosi b'olam chavero is that through connection to other people, we are demonstrating fundamentally being part of the klal, and seeing that the Torah needs to be connected to the klal, so therefore, we can establish a connection with Torah. Anybody know where else we sort of had the same concept? Or maybe like a famous idea, the Maharal, that discusses the same idea of being part of the klal. The Maharal speaks about this in dozens and dozens of places. But I just want to mention, there's a very famous and very beautiful Gemara that appears towards the end of Sefer Sota. So the Gemara says that without going into all the details, that we know that when there is a person who was found dead out in the woods. Okay? And then, of course, you bring the Egla Rufa, and you shek the Egla Rufa, and what do the Zakenim say, the elders of the city, what do they say in Parsha Shoftim? Yodeinu lo shafchu. We did not kill this dead person out in the woods. So the Gemara says, would we ever have thought that Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Lebracha, killed this person out of the woods? What does it mean, Yodeinu Lo Shafku? Does anybody know what the Gemara says? The Gemara says that what it means is that this person came to our town, and we welcomed him into shul, we gave him food, we gave him a place to stay, and we were malava him. We escorted him out of the town. That's what the Gemara says. And from there, Chazal learned that when you escort a person out of a town, it's as though you're giving the person life. And if you don't do that, it's kim'at, the Gemara says, as though you're a shofech damim. You're almost like a murderer. The Maharal says, what's going on? Someone comes to your house, they come, they stay, they eat, they leave a gift, you have a nice Shabbos, you walk them out of the house, that's like saving their life. And the opposite is also true. So the Maharal says so beautifully that no, it's about a demonstration that you are part of something bigger than yourself. He said, however the cosmos work, there's a relationship between the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Am. There's a certain type of protection that God shows towards the nation. There's a certain type of sort of like metaphysical presence of God in the people's lives. And that's true when a person is part of a tzibur. When a person is part of an Am, when they're part of something. So then, but if I just walk out of town, and I walk into shul, I go into Young Israel West Hempstead, although it wouldn't happen there, and nobody cares, and nobody invites me over, and then I leave the shul, nobody says goodbye, the rabbi doesn't care, you're making a fundamental statement to the community that this is not a klal, and therefore every person is sort of left to their own sort of, just whatever might happen to that person. There's a demonstration of being part of a klal, and the Maharal said that that's exactly what happens. If you're nosibom chavero, there's a statement that I'm part of something, and therefore, because I'm part of something, I am ra'oi l'Torah. I want to think about the Maharal for a second, and then we'll conclude. The one hand, you can look at the Maharal very simply and say that ki'isha chagolev echad, there's a condition that there be Klai Yisrael in order to give the Torah. There's a condition that B'nai Yisrael be unified, okay, in order for the Torah to be given. And that's absolutely true. It's like it's a tanai. It's a condition in the giving of the Torah. But on a much deeper level, a person would say that based on the concept of the Zohar, of Yisrael, the Kitshu Brichu, the Oraisa Chadhu, that the nation and God and the Torah are one. That there is a fundamental, cosmological, metaphysical, whatever word you want to use, connection between the Am and the Torah, the Am and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's only when we exist as an Am, it's only when we are showing up to the world in the fullness of the Jewish people, it's only then that, to some degree, the radiance of the Torah is experienced, the radiance of a Torah life, the beauty of the Torah, the fullness of the Torah. It's only then, in a way, and it's difficult to even say this, that when the Am exists fully, it's only then that you say that God is fully a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because then God is radiated through the nation, and through Klal Yisrael, and through the Torah, and then God's presence is fully felt in the world. Meaning, without Nosei B'Om Chavero, and without a sense of community, and without a sense of an Am, without a sense of connection, the very idea of the full radiance and experience and connection to Torah is diminished. In order for there to be a full radiance of Torah, there needs to be a full sense of Klal Yisrael that accepts the Torah. And therefore, if a person says, I'm going to learn, and I have Shmias HaOzen, I'm going to listen, and I'll be a masmid, I'll be serious, and I'll be smart, and I'll work on my intellect, but I don't really care about the people around me, and I'm not worried about Klal Yisrael, and I live in my corner, there's a fundamental chisaron in that acceptance of the Torah. The Torah itself is like almost like a flailing, dying animal, because the spirit of Klal Yisrael doesn't exist in that space. And according to Rav Kook and many others, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's radiance is only felt when Am Yisrael exists in its full sense as well. And therefore, of course, it makes sense that part of the Kinyan HaTorah is we know Tzibi Olam Chavera. I want to just mention for a minute, it's hard to speak about the experience that we had in Vienna, on many, many, many levels, part of which it's hard to sort of start talking about something that was like such like a magical experience. I think that's really, really what it was for everyone who was there. It's hard to sort of describe the feelings of those moments, of the kumzitz and the Purim party and the Purim Seuda and the Friday night, and like anybody who was there knows what I'm speaking about. I don't sort of like speak about it. It almost feels like you can't really convey those feelings. And it's also because on a personal level, there was such a feeling of intimacy and a tremendous love that I felt for the people who were there, both the Klal and the Prat, including many people who are here this evening, that sort of like speak about those experiences. It almost feels like that belongs like in a private sector of your life. Like you don't go ahead and like start talking about, you know, your children in a public setting unless you want your children very, very, very angry at you and it's highly inappropriate. But so to sort of speak about those experiences, it feels a little bit either lacking or uncomfortable to do so. But what I would tell you is sort of thinking about this idea, the full radiance of Klal Yisrael, that I think what I experienced there and maybe leaving Vienna last Sunday, maybe a feeling that would I ever experience this in the same way that I did in those days, sort of coming to this beautiful city with the backdrop of the war, working with refugees. So I remember we were one night, this was Tuesday night, so I guess, what's today? Monday? Life is like a blur. So this, I guess it was like 13 days ago. And we were in this like cafeteria in the middle of Vienna. And I think that was the night of the Purim costumes. So these two twin brothers had just arrived the day before, Yaakov and Meir, with their very beautiful children and their wives. And we were in line with them, and I was trying to have some conversation with them in some, because you weren't there to be helpful, so in some broken Hebrew or broken English. And they're like, oh, so you're here, why you, on vacation, right? I'm like, no, like, not, I mean, it was vacation also, like, not vacation, like, what are you here? I'm like, well, it was hard for me to tell this to these people who they themselves are refugees. I'm like, I didn't want them to feel like a couple of nebuchs. We're here to help the refugees, you know? Like, I'm like, we're here because, you know, we knew there was a lot going on in the world and people were coming into Vienna and we just felt that we wanted to be here. And something in the midst of my broken Hebrew, English, Russian sort of clicked. And both of them, these like twin brothers, just like started crying on the spot. Just like you can see like a shudder in their shoulders and like a glassiness in their eyes of a feeling that these strangers picked up from New York to come to Vienna, to wait in line, to have a kumzitz with these people and their children, to bring their children for customs. A Jew would come from across the world for that. It was the most impactful, those moments, which we had so many of those moments when we were there, right? Just like over and over again, that feeling. And obviously, that's not something that any of us in our normal lives, like those experiences, like I'm not going to be in Vienna again, you know, on the backdrop of 3.5 million refugees at this point leaving Ukraine, with that group of people, this amazing group of people, in that moment, in that space of time, like that's like something we'll never probably experience again, which is like a little sad because it was really magical. But the heart of the matter, you know, whatever you want to call it, the Nishmas Yisrael, or the Nosgum Chaveiro, or living one's life with a sense of an absolute seriousness, of commitment to other people, and that needs to be front and center in my life. Like, that exists no matter when, and no matter who, and where, and what language, and what experience, and that's easier felt when you have that type of experience in Vienna, but it's true every moment of every day. And I spoke last week in the Beis Medrash in YU and the morning, so you listen to it. And just the day that I got back from Vienna, back to the Beis Medrash, I found out there's a guy in YU who was struggling with something. Also in Yuhapitzville, not the same Yuhapitzville as the previous Yuhapitzville, but also, you know, an hour and a half away from YU, going on like no sleep and just exhausted. I thought to myself, this guy has been in his house, depressed for the last like day or two. And let me just like show up to his house and just like, you know, knock on his door, let him know that I love him, give him a hug, and see if I can make it back to Muncie in one piece, which thank God, a few stops along the way and about 40 ounces of coffee, but we made it back. So he said, like, Rabbi, like, I can't believe, like, you're jet lagged, you drove out here, and like, you can't even stay. And so I told him, which I'll tell you, I said, it's the only way to live. I mean, the only way to live is just to show up for the people in your life, and even the people who are not in your life, or even when they're people that you can't do anything about it, or even people that are across the world, like, it's the only way to live, to experience the full radiance of the Jewish people, and hence, Yisrael Baraisa Kitchabrichu Chatu, the full sense of bringing a Kadosh Baruch Hu into this world in a meaningful type of way. Now, what I would say before I end is that there's also a lot of self-care needed if you're an empathetic person. You can't constantly be going and running and who's in Nicaragua that I have to bring a pair of shoes to, and who's over here, and is there a refugee in the middle of Sudan? Like, you know, there has to be self-care and moderation and healthiness. But as far as like the mindset being of where can I be and what can I do, and have that mindset shape an entire Shabbos Chayim, like that is exactly what the Torah and Chazal have instructed us to do. And I'm grateful for the opportunities in Austria to have sort of reminded myself of the significance and the beauty of that life. So thank you guys. Enjoy your grade. I always enjoy the shiurim down here. And then you're going to be in Connecticut Shabbos. Look forward to seeing you guys. And that's it. Thank you, everyone. Take care. Marty, what do I do? Okay.